Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome back to the show Ryan Cote, and he is here to ask if you are fulfilling your potential. It's a big question. He is also here to share his thoughts on growth mindset. Now, Ryan is the director, of digital service and a partner at direct mail and digital marketing company called Ballantine. And in a previous interview called Raising Brand Awareness in the Real World, he shared lessons learned from a third-generation family business, as well as many other pearls of wisdom. In today's episode, he is going to talk about cold showers. Can't wait to hear about that. Morning routines, I'm assuming they're one and the same. Self-improvement, improving yourself to become a better leader, and inspiring other people. Ryan, good morning. Welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio. It's good to see you again.
Hey, likewise, Denise. Happy to be here again.
Yeah. Well, we had such a terrific time last time you were here, which I think was in July, perhaps. It wasn't that long ago. And I remember saying, okay, we're not getting anywhere near as much information as I wanted to get out of you. Can you come back? And you were gracious enough to say yes. So here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, excited to talk again. This is a topic that I love marketing, obviously, but I love talking about this stuff too, so I'm excited.
Right. Well, in case our audience has not heard our other podcast, share a bit about yourself, and then we're going to take off and start talking about self-improvement and leadership, morning routines. I love morning routines. Honestly, if you don't have a good one in the morning, I found that you just kind of wander around and go, now what? So we'll talk about that. But give people a little bit of insight into who you are and why you do the things you do.
Yeah, sure. So like you mentioned in the intro, I'm director of digital services and partner at Ballantine. It's a family business. I'm third generation. My great uncle started the company in the mid-60s. And now myself, my two brothers, my uncle are partners in the business. So that's my day-to-day. Been here for 16 years now. Personal note, I'm 40 years old. I'm married for 13 years. And I have three daughters. So that keeps me very busy. So that's me personally and professionally.
I remember you telling me that you lived in a woman-owned household. And I think I commiserated with you a bit. Didn't you tell me even your dog is a female, or am I thinking of something else?
No. So we have two cats. One is a male, one is a female. So I've got my one male cat. He's a little older, though, so I'm like, hang on, buddy. You know, but it's a woman. It's definitely a woman-run household, and we're actually in the process as we speak of selling our house and moving into a new house. So it's just pretty crazy right now. Crazy time.
Oh my gosh! And the holidays are coming.
Yeah.
Been there, done that. I bought my house right after Hurricane Katrina, and then I moved into this house right before Thanksgiving, the week of. And then I had 20 people coming for Thanksgiving. We were literally pulling pots and pans out of boxes in the garage. I feel for you. I really do. So
yeah,
listen,
sounds like
we'll
be doing the same thing.
Yeah, and you know, you look back on it and go, you know, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. We got it done. We survived. So you will survive this. Cold showers. I have to know, straight out of the chute, what is that all about?
Yeah, see, it sounds crazy, and I'm not the one that started this sort of like a movement. I listen to a lot of podcasts. That's something that that we could talk about as part of like the whole growth mindset and self personal development. But a lot of the people that I listen to, a lot of people that I respect, even people like Tony Robbins, these like big public figures, they would talk about cold showers, and it got me thinking, okay, well, if it's something that they do, maybe I should consider trying it. And the whole reason, there's like health benefits to it, but that's not why I do it. And I, you know, obviously I'm not a doctor, so I can't back that stuff up, but according to what I've read and what I've heard, there's definitely health benefits to it. But I don't do it for that. I do it more for the fact that you're doing something that you do not want to do. So putting yourself into an uncomfortable situation, doing something that you're about to take a cold shower, like your mind's fighting you not to do it. And then when you do it anyway, it's just a good feeling. It's a feeling of accomplishment. It's sort of like training yourself to do something you don't want to do. Yeah. I'm in New Jersey. So, I've been taking cold showers for about a year now. And in the summer, it's like a joke. The water's not even that cold. I mean, it's cold, I guess, but it doesn't feel that cold. But wait, we're recording this in October. We're talking in October, so the water's starting to get colder and colder, and now it's like my mind's starting to be like, hey, I don't really feel like doing this, but I do it anyway, and it's a good feeling, and you do that over and over again every single day, and it just starts to change you a little bit and just getting used to uncomfortable things and doing them anyway.
I know Tony Robbins does this. In fact, if you've ever watched I'm Not Your Guru, the Netflix special, you'll see that before he's going anywhere, he's getting ready to go to one of his events. I think he does it every day, to be honest. He will jump in to a cold pool, and it's icy, apparently. And every time he does it, I just go, oh, gosh. but I have to say, I kind of reverse the cold showers, and I probably should do it the right way, and I keep thinking I'm going to try it. But I will start my shower hot enough to steam broccoli, seriously. It's hot. But by the time I get out of the shower, I've turned it down, and now I've got it all the way cold, which my body can, my body says, okay, we can do this, but I keep thinking I need to reverse that a bit or just do the cold shower. When you first started, how much of a shock was it to you?
I mean, and so to be honest, I do the same way you do it. I don't do it where I'm steaming broccoli, but I keep it like lukewarm, and then I just make it colder and colder, and at the last couple of minutes, it's ice cold. The first time I did it,
Was... Okay, so I feel better now because I thought I was cheating.
Well, honestly, like I think the fully cold shower is probably the ultimate, so maybe I need to challenge myself to be a little more comfortable. I just, when it's in winters in New Jersey, it's like, you just have such a chill, but like here I am now making excuses, but maybe that's next level. But the first time I did it, it was my wife came running into the bathroom. She's like, what's wrong? And I started not screaming, but I was sort of like yelping, I guess, because it was the winter and it was just frozen liquid coming onto my skin. But she comes running in. She's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I'm taking a cold shower. I said, the shower's cold. She's like, well, our hot water doesn't work? And I'm like, no, it's fine. And she's like, so you're taking a cold shower on purpose? And I'm like, yep. And she just shook her head and walked out of the bathroom, but she knows how I am. But she thinks I'm strange, I guess.
Well, and here's my question, because, I mean, taking a cold, look, I wake up at 3:18 every morning. I don't know why, I just do. And sometimes I will just go jump in the hot shower. I live alone. I can do these things. I can vacuum at 3:18 if I want and have done so. But oftentimes I will go take the hottest shower that I can stand to try to put myself back to sleep. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So the reverse of that, I'm thinking, and I've noticed this with myself, once I take that water down to cold, cold as I can get, I'm in Southwest Louisiana. It's not going to get that cold most of the time. But I find that I'm more alert. My body's awake. My brain is awake. I'm not trying to go, oh, that felt good. My muscles are relaxed. I'm going back to bed. So I do it for that, to just kind of wake myself up and go, come on, let's do this. Let's go. Even though I'm one of those people, I hit the floor running, taking the shower down to cold seems to just make it a little bit, I don't know, I'm not foggy, but it just seems like my brain is a little bit more alert. Do you find that?
Yeah, actually, I didn't think of mentioning that, but that is very true. It definitely wakes you up. It makes you feel more energized. When you turn the shower off, you've got like a minute where you feel pretty alive, especially, it depends how cold the shower is. But yeah, that's definitely helps just get you pumped up a little bit. It's just a good thing. You know, I often say, like, people ask me, like, why I take a cold shower, and I say, because I don't want to take a cold shower. So that's kind of summarizes, I guess, the reason I do it in a sentence. But yeah, definitely makes you more alive too.
So you're basically teaching yourself to be, you know, you say you're going to do it, just darn do it. Don't just, oh, you know, I think I'm going to take a cold shower. You're actually training yourself to do what you say you're going to do, whether you like it or
yeah.
not.
Yeah, and I think it also translates, and I know it, to people listening, it might sound like we're making sort of like a big deal out of something small, but it really when you do it over and over again, it really isn't small, because it sort of translates into a lot of areas in life. Because, like, when the shower's lukewarm, I'm sort of comfortable, but when I'm about to turn it into ice cold liquid, like, my mind starts to try to talk me out of it, and then I just turn a dial, and the water comes out, and I do it. It sort of translates into other things, like making the call that you don't want to make. You're sort of nervous, sort of, you know, hesitating. You do it anyway. It's sort of like that concept of just, you know, you're about to do something and you don't want to do it. Your mind starts to talk you out of it, but you do it anyway, like going to talk to someone for whatever reason. Like, all these situations where you have, like, these moments where you're sort of hesitating, you know, and then your mind just talks you out of it. I feel like the cold shower is like that daily practice of just getting yourself comfortable just to feel that moment of hesitation, but then just doing it anyway, if that makes
daily
sense.
Daily practice. It does. It really does, because, you know, I just wrote down daily practice, because it is easy, and we're going to move on to morning routines because I think they are so important. It is easy
yes.
to just kind of go, well, you know, I've already did it. I didn't really like it. It was kind of cold. I yelped. I cried. You know, I cursed. You know, I don't want to keep doing that. But you're right. It does set up those routines in that kind of frame of mind. Well, you know, I've already done it. I can do it again. It didn't kill me. You know what? It actually taught me something. So let's go do it. And frankly, I find that they feel good. I really do. And even though I'm pretty alert once I wake up, my mother sent me a birthday card. You know, the devil says when she's awake, oh, crap, she's awake, or something like that. It's true. I mean, I open my eyes and I hit the floor running. But that cold or colder shower does help me go, oh, okay, now I want to go do da-da-da-da-da, and I'm off and running even more than I was before. So that leads us into morning routines, because I have found, and I think you and I spoke about this the last time we were on the phone, that if you open your eyes and you wake up and you spend that first few minutes before you hit the floor in gratitude, your day just is better, I think. And what are some of your morning routines?
Yes, yeah, so I started my morning routine, 2019, it was about 2 years ago. I was in a situation here at Ballantyne where just things weren't going well, like, just in terms of, like, new business and just client retention and just overall just things just weren't going well. And so I was trying to ground myself, figure out, you know, what the heck to do here. And so I started just changing things about myself and about my life, thinking that it would carry over into Ballantyne, and ended up, you know, doing that. So I started going to boxing for exercise. You know, but instead of gym, I chose boxing, so a more physical sport. I just made sort of health style changes, like stop eating red meat, and there are things like the other things, but also the morning routine, and that was probably the biggest thing. And it was the book Morning Miracle or Miracle Morning. I can never remember which order the words are, but I heard about that, and so I read it. And over the last couple of years, I've sort of adapted the morning routine to, like, what I like the most and what I can, you know, stick with every day, doing every morning. So it's changed over the last couple of years. And I don't follow the Miracle Morning, the process he outlines to the T, but a lot of the elements I pulled from it, and I've kind of crafted my own morning routine. So, you know, what I do is it's a combination of, you know, meditation with deep breathing. It's a combination of I do some exercises. So I've got, like, a specific movement that I do, like calisthenics with push-ups and some ab stuff and stretching. It's a routine that I sort of created. I also do the boxing, like I mentioned, but this is just, like, the part of the morning routine to get my body moving. So I do some light exercising. While I'm doing the exercising, I listen to a podcast called 7 Good Minutes. It's like a Quick Will podcast with positive inspirational messages, and it varies from day to day, but I listen to that while I'm doing the exercises. And then I use the 5-Minute Journal. It's an app on my phone. It just kind of tells you, it kind of asks you, you know, what are you grateful for? It has a section for affirmations. So I just take time, you know, what went well the previous day. So I take time to fill that out. And that's my morning routine. So it's a combination of, you know, exercise, meditation, gratitude practice, listening to something positive. Kind of like you said, just starting your day on your own terms and with, like, you know, with positive feedback.
Exactly. If you don't start the day on your own terms, great phrase, by the way, you're immediately at the mercy of other people or other pets. With me, it's my cats. They will go, "Mom, I'm hungry." Okay, I'm coming. And I'm instantly off into what they want as opposed to what I want. Then I go to my office and I'm looking at email. And, you know, I've learned not to do that first thing in the morning because instantly I am at the, you know, behest of other people. So I think it's a great idea to have those morning routines and that morning time where you are setting your intentions, where you are deciding what you're going to be doing, what's important, what's critical, and how you're going to, you know, take the day and make it yours. I think it's very, very important. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, and you mentioned it, you know, you started this kind of morning routine because of things that were going on with Valentine. A lot of people would just power through it. We're just going to power through it. We're going to have meetings. We're going to do this. We're going to do. But you took a more internal route. What brought that change about? Did you decide, look, this isn't working all around? Or was there some kind of other influence that made you think, you know, I'm in charge of this, but I have to start it first thing? How did that happen?
Yeah, and we made some changes internally. We made some changes at Ballantyne, too, in terms of, like, the process that we would use to onboard clients and the types of clients we were going after. So it was sort of like a full 360 approach to this. But I knew I was a part of this, and, you know, we were starting to hire more people here, and I had no practice with leading people or managing people. And so I just realized that, you know, as a whole part of this turnaround process that, you know, I needed to work on myself too. And where did that come from? I mean, I've always been listening to, it's funny, you know, I said we were selling our house. And so I was in the attic looking at boxes that I had, you know, up there and books that I had in there from years ago. And even back like 10 years ago, I was reading books like the 1% formula or whatever, something like some How to Improve Your Life. And just like books like that. I've always, even going back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I've listened to these kind of books. And now with podcasts available, it's just kind of amplified my consumption. So I think I was just sort of trained to think that way just from all the content I've consumed. And I realized that, okay, if things aren't going well, obviously there's things we need to change here at Ballantyne. But, you know, I'm also a part of this too, so I need to do something to myself as well. And that's, I think I came across the morning miracle at that time or right around that time. And so it just kind of made sense just to try, you know, and see what it did. And it was really, I'm not saying it was the only reason everything turned around, but I think it was a big part of it.
You listen to Mel Robbins as well, don't you? I do. Mel Robbins,
Yeah, I listened to her book, The 5-Second Rule. I listened to her book, and it was really good.
It is, and I'll tell you what, she really grabbed my attention with her TED Talk, and I remember thinking, you've got to be kidding me. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you're kidding me. It can't be that simple. It actually is that simple. You have to kind of jockey yourself out of whatever mental position you're in and say, kind of like with the cold showers, I'm going to do this in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm telling you, it's amazing. I put it up on my whiteboard, and after a while, it was just noise. I didn't even see it anymore because it really became a way for me to, and I don't have to do the whole 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I just go 5, okay, I'm going. I was having an eye appointment not too long ago, and I was listening to this mother tell her young, really rambunctious son, you've got 4, I'm going to count to 4. And she went 4. And then she went 4.5, and then she went 3, and I thought, oh, you were teaching him wrong. I didn't say anything. It's not my place. But the little boy did what the little boy darn well wanted to do. And I wanted to say, go listen to Mel Robbins. You're doing it, but it's not my place. But you can't go four and a half, three. Okay, let's try it again. Just if you're going to, my point here is if you say you're going to do something, even if you're just saying it to yourself, do it. Don't give yourself excuses. And it's an important thing.
I agree with you.
Do not give yourself excuses.
Yeah, you're keeping a promise to yourself. There's that. That's another message that a lot of the people that I respect, they'll push. Like, just keep a promise to yourself. If you're gonna say you're gonna go to the gym, if you say you're gonna wake up early, if you say you're gonna take a cold shower, if you say you're gonna do your morning routine, do it. Because when you start breaking the promises to yourself, it might not seem like a big deal, but when you compound that over months of just not doing what you say you're gonna do, it changes your identity and. It's just not good. So I try to really keep the word to myself as well. Not perfect.
I agree with you.
I'm not saying I'm perfect.
No,
I try my best.
It's difficult. I mean, I'll catch myself jumping out of bed and running to my desk at midnight because I said I was going to do something. Whether the client knows I said it or not, I didn't do it. It's like, oh, geez. And my body is not going to rest until whatever it was that I said I was going to do gets done. It's just, and that becomes a routine as well. So let's go back to Ballantine. So when you started making, these internal practices and promises and shifts, how did that translate to Ballantine? Did you start talking with other people about that? Did you bring them on board? Did they just notice that you were changing? Because clearly it did something in Ballantine.
So it definitely made some changes at Ballantine, and I could definitely talk about how I try to inspire the team here, and I'm starting to notice changes on just conversations I'm having with team members here and books I'm recommending to them, even how I'm trying to use social media for this as well. But to answer your question, when I started working on the morning routine and doing like going to boxing and just working on myself and the changes that we made to internally here at Ballantine, we just found that we were just getting luckier, like we were getting more deals. The clients were coming in easier. Just the new business started to have a significant uptick about 2 months in to us making a lot of changes. And so I'm not saying it's just the morning routine, but you combine the morning routine with just working on yourself, combined with just the changes we made internally about the types of clients we're going after, they were better fits and all that. It just started to, there was a noticeable uptick in our new business efforts, and it's been strong ever since.
You know what that tells me, and I've always believed this, people may hear what you say, but they watch what you do. And it sounds like that's what's happening in your company.
I think so. So we've got a bigger team now, and so what I try to do to be a better leader is and this will tie into personal development, but every week, every Sunday, I send out an email to the team. So we've got about 12 people now on the digital side of the business. We've got more people because we do print and digital, but on the digital side, which I'm responsible for, we've got about 12 people now. and so every Sunday, I send out an email to the team talking about wins to try to get them to start thinking about all right, what are my wins, And so I talk about wins. I talk about company news. It varies. Every week is different. But part of it, I always gravitate towards self-development and personal development and things like that. And I'm noticing, so I'm trying to inspire them to think a little bit differently. And I'm noticing that there's small changes. I wouldn't say everyone's fully engaged with it for sure, but a few people, they'll ask me for books I recommend, and they'll ask me to bring in books. So they'll talk about the podcast they were listening to recently, or they'll talk about how they're trying to take cold showers themselves, or the morning routine that they're trying to work out and stick with. So the conversations I'm having with the team members, it's different now. I would say that for the first 6 months, I was wondering if anyone was even reading emails, but then they would come up to me and start talking about the books and the podcast and the morning routine and cold showers. And I'm like, this is actually starting to work a little bit. So it's really cool to work on yourself, but then when you try to inspire other people and you can see that they're starting to think a little bit differently, it's pretty cool. It fires me up.
Well, and they're becoming more aware of the possibilities, which is always an excellent thing. It does take time. I mean, you can't just say, okay, go read this book. For right now, excuse me, One of my clients actually is Mark H. Fowler, and he's been a guest here as well. And he and two of his co-authors have written a book that I find very, very important called Revolutionary Conversations. And I promise you, that book is on my desk. I have a whole bookcase behind me of books from, you know, people that I've had on this show, and, you know, they're all business books. This book has a permanent spot on my desk because it really is that important. In fact, I actually used what they call the share tools on my mother before she passed away, because she went from having to move from, she had a terrible fall and she eventually passed, but she was fighting it the whole way. She did not want to leave her apartment. She did not want to have to move into a purpose-built building that my sister had created for her. She was fighting. And I took this book, and I had a very, very important conversation with my mother that worked. So there are, you know, some books and some tools that once you kind of locate them, you're like, oh, my goodness, and this happens to be one of those. So I completely understand when you're sharing, you know, books and wisdom with other people, they may not get it right away, but they're going to hear it when they need to hear it, is my point. And I've always found
that. Can I share a book that... Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah, let's share books, because, look, anything that you've got that my audience can use, absolutely.
You know, this to me, I mean, for me, this is just my opinion, but to me, this is like the ultimate personal development. It's an audiobook. It's not a book. I don't think they, yeah, it's definitely, it's just an audiobook. It's, to me, in my opinion, it's like the ultimate personal development book. Have you ever heard of, his name is Jim Rohn?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Who hasn't? Absolutely.
Okay, I didn't know it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah,
I think we've read listened to all the same people, I promise you.
So, yeah, Jim Rohn is sort of like the I don't think it was like this. Well, him, Zig Ziglar, like the early guys of personal development. But Jim Rohn, just the way he communicates to the message, you know, it just really resonates with me. I soak in. I understand what he's saying. And I love his the way he communicates, the way he presents. His words sort of like dance. It sounds kind of weird, but you got to listen to him. He just has a way of presenting the information, and the way he simplifies the message, it just helps it really soak in. And so he passed away, I think, 10 years ago.
Something like that.
I don't know if his family or whoever it was, they put together a basic compilation of all his speeches and his messages and all that into a 12-hour audiobook called like The Ultimate Jim Rohn Library. It's on Amazon. It's like $40 or whatever. It's still on the pricier side for audiobook, but man, it's worth it. It's like such an investment in yourself. I listened to it. I just got it last 2 weeks ago. I listened to it, and honestly, I'm probably going to just keep on listening to it, just 10 minutes at a time here and there, just keep on soaking in the information. To me, it's like the ultimate personal development audio course.
I think it was Kyle Wilson who put that together, but don't quote me on that. I think so. But yeah, I'm familiar with it. It's an amazing book. And yeah, there was Zig Ziglar, there was Earl Nightingale. I mean, it just Earl Nightingale,
yes.
I think, really was kind of the father of all of this. But, you know,
yes.
Wallace Wattles. Did you ever read Wallace Wattles?
Wallace Wattles. No, that's a name I would remember.
Yeah.
I don't recall that one. Recall him.
Go find him. He was pre all of these guys. Amazing, amazing stuff. In fact, I'll send you a link to some of it. But Wallace Wattles, I mean, he, I think, really started the whole, you know, pay attention to what you're thinking, what you're doing, how you're perceiving things, and, you know, how you're presenting yourself. I found him a long, long time ago. And I found Zig Ziglar a long, long time ago at a garage sale, of all places. I remember being at a garage sale and picking up this little binder with a bunch of cassette tapes in it. Who had a cassette tape? But I wanted to know what the heck a Zig Ziglar was, and I found out.
Yeah.
Been in love with him ever since. And of course, that, you know, that voice and the way he would speak with things. But self-improvement, and we're going to, you know, it was one of the things we wanted to talk about. I think it's so important, because you can't just get out of bed every day and go, well, you know, I'm going to go do this, 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 and this, but I'm not going to learn a darn thing. And I think people are becoming more aware of that, how we perceive ourselves and how we perceive the world, and what we bring to the world, I think, is a big thought. I think many of us don't realize just how much we give to the world. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I mean, I know everyone gets fired up by different things, but for me, it's growth, it's personal growth, being productive, working on myself, trying to inspire other people, you know, because the bottom line is, you know, when you grow yourself and you improve yourself, you're obviously benefiting yourself, but you're benefiting the people that are around you as well, whether it be colleagues or because you're showing up differently at work, or your family because you're showing up differently, you know, whether you're making more money, enabling you to move into a new neighborhood, or just like, you know, me being a father, you know, I've got the, not the obligation, but the, you know, I want to make sure my girls think differently and work on themselves, and I'm trying to get them to do affirmations. I think they just do it because they're like, ah, crazy dad, but I've got them saying affirmations now and stuff like that. So I just feel like, you know, personal development, you know, investing in yourself is like the best investment you can make because there's like so many ripple effects to it, you know, but business and personally, it just, to me, it just makes total sense just to work on yourself and you'll reap benefits beyond just yourself.
Absolutely. So when you are improving yourself to be a better leader, were there any particular or are there any particular steps that you would recommend people, you know, start taking a look at? Look, I'm a leader, even though I have never met my team. My team is scattered all over the country. Some are in Canada, some are here. I've worked with many of them for years. I have to be a leader, right? I mean, even though I'm here by myself in my home office, I have to be the leader. And that took me some doing. It really did. I kept saying, well, you know, I can give them instructions, I can do this and that, but I wasn't really leading. And it took me a while to realize that I was just kind of barking orders, which tends to be who I am anyway, or used to be. I've changed. But I think I have. But, you know, are there any kind of recommendations that you can make for people, whether they are like me, they're a solopreneur, they have contractors, or they have people in their office, 12, 100, whatever it is, where can they start to be a better leader?
Yeah, so this is an area, I feel like honestly this is something that I'll always be working on. You know, I never had to worry about being a leader because, you know, I think I mentioned in our first conversation, but at Ballantine it was just me leading myself for so long because I was like the director of the marketing team, but it was only me. So this is an area I think honestly I'll be probably working on for the rest of my life. And there's leadership both at home and at work. So the first thing I've realized that, you know, you need to be a strong version of yourself if you're gonna have any chance of leading anyone. So that's where the morning routine comes in, the cold showers, the you know, affirmations and all that stuff that goes into making yourself, you know, the content you consume. We haven't even talked about that yet, but the content you consume, you know, you have to work on yourself. You know, you have to be a strong version of yourself. You have to show up strong if you're gonna be a leader. So that's where I would encourage everyone to, you know, start the morning routine, you know, do as much as you can, the cold showers, the content you consume, you know, work on yourself. But then what I've also realized is it really is how you take care of your team as well. You know, it's really important to inspire the team that you work with, look after them, try to invest in them. So like what that looks like for me, for us, for Ballantine is, you know, the weekly email that I send out, as small as it sounds, when you do it every week over months and months and months and months, it starts to have an impact. So that, you know, it's investing in them, you know, and giving them tips and keeping them in the loop on stuff. We also do professional training every month. Actually, there's professional training happening right now as we speak. My brother's teaching the team on how to use Google Sheets. Hopefully they're still all awake, but he's teaching them how to use Google Sheets. So it's like monthly training, investing in them. And then we try to give the team perks as well, like breakfast during their birthdays, a monthly lunch that the company pays for. We do quarterly outings with the team. We just did a laser tag last week. So I guess if I had to summarize everything into this long answer here, it's investing in the team, showing them you care, trying to make them better and stronger and just investing in them both professionally and personally. And that's, I think, a really good sign of a good leader.
One of the things that I have found by listening to, you know, business owners like you and by operating my own business for so long is that if you don't actually really listen to your team members or your employees and you invite their feedback, you're not going to get anywhere with them. They may not know
yes.
that they're resentful, that you're just kind of ignoring them, but eventually you're going to figure out that they don't really like you and they don't really respect you. So when you're having these meetings with people or you're bringing them in for, let's say, their quarterly review or whatever it is, how do you invite people to really, really speak with you? And, look, you can get your feelings hurt. I have done. You know, I mean, we think we're doing the right thing, and oftentimes we're not. Because, and I found this out the hard way, each individual person that works with us or works for us is an individual. So you can't do this one, you know, this works for the company, so we're going to do it with everybody. How do you get people to really, really concentrate on what it is that they should be doing as a leader? I mean, how do you lead them without bossing them around, I guess, is the question. Because many of us are just autocratic. And my hand just went up. I can be as autocratic as the next person, even to myself. I'm bossy to me. It's not pretty.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question. I think it's there's a lot of layers to it. I mean, you know, you asked how to get people to open up. I think it just starts from the top down and how we behave. Like we're very open. We encourage a lot of feedback. Like, you know, it's we've got like a pot of stand-up desks. I'm out there, and you know, my brother Scott's out there as well. So like we try to be part of the team and have like a really open door policy. I mean, there's no door, so it's very open, but. You know, and we also try to communicate a lot. So we have Larissa here. She manages the team. She has weekly meetings with every person here, every team member on the digital side, at least. So every week she's meeting with them, just saying, "Hey, what's up? How you doing? What's going on? Any struggles? Anything we want to talk about?" So it's just a very communication heavy on just getting them to open up and talk. And then I try to take everyone out on a one-to-one basis for lunch, like every couple months. Just did it recently with a new woman that we hired, Taylor. So just take them out to lunch, not talk about business, just talk about them, what they have going on personally, and as much as they want to share, and just talk, hang out, try to get to know them better. So those are the things that we do in terms of getting them to do what they need to do without like being bossy. I mean, first thought that comes to mind is if you hire the right people, you don't need to like micromanage them, because I don't want to micromanage. I don't think it's healthy. If you hire the right people, you don't need to.
Yeah.
You know? So that's, you know, it comes down to hiring the right people and having the right processes in place and how we structure our work and the project management software that we use and all of that.
So, Ryan, do you have any examples where you had an employee, past, future, now, not future, but, you know, now or in the dim, distant past, where you simply could not get them off of dead center? Do you have any examples of how you either solved it or had to let them go?
What do you mean by dead center?
Some people are just not going to do what you need them to do. Either it's a communication problem or it's just part of their personality, they're just going to put in the time, go home. And we've all had those employees. So how do you get them off of that? Or can you?
Yeah.
Or have you?
Yeah. Yeah, that's that's actually a conversation we had recently here. It's like we need to find out what motivates everyone. Everyone is motivated a little bit differently. So we need to find out what motivates them, what's going to make them be excited to come to work. You know, we try to make the work environment here more relaxed, you know, some work from home days, just to make it a place where they don't dread coming. But yeah, we've had a couple people here where they just wasn't a good fit. They just weren't happy, and they found their dream jobs, and we encourage them to, you know, take it and go for it and kept in touch with them. No bridges were burned. You know, it's not always a good fit, and if it's not going to work out, and we try to turn it around, we try to be like, what can we do? What do you need? And if it's just not, then in a couple of cases, it just didn't work. And it was fine. Like, we're still on good terms with them, and they found jobs that they love, and they moved on. So, you know, we do our best to motivate them and find out what lights them up. But if it's not going to fit, if it's not a good fit and it doesn't work, then we just part ways on good terms. And that's what we've had to do a couple of times.
I think that happens a lot more than people would like. I mean, just because you have the job doesn't mean you're going to love it or appreciate it or even want to show up. For me,
yeah.
You do not want me in somebody else's office. I don't, you know, I really don't want to talk with people. I don't want to coffee clutch. I just want to do my work, and I want everybody to leave me alone. So I am not an office person. And some people are not. I mean, seriously, you're not going to catch me in the break room gossiping. I will be outside getting the heck away from you people. I'm an introvert. You probably know that. But some people are just, it's like we run with scissors. We don't play well with others, and get your own damn coffee. I'm not going to do it for you. But and that's why I work alone. But here's the thing. Oh, and I wanted to ask you this, too, because I mean, there are a lot more introverts than I think were previously noticed. There are a lot of us. Do you have people in your office that are introverts and need to be kind of in a corner by themselves where they work best? Or have you not come across that yet?
Yes, I would say like our team in general, is, including myself, we're fairly quiet. I wouldn't say some are more introverted than others, but we haven't had to like isolate anyone. It is just the way our office is structured. We have the stand up desk, the pod. Everyone stands up, sits together. But you know, everyone wears ear pods if they want to listen to music and. You know, we encourage everyone to, you don't necessarily have to work at your desk. You can go into the conference room. We've got a couple of lounges, like where I'm speaking to you from right now. So we've got different rooms where people can move around as they need to, if they need to be alone. But we haven't had to like isolate anyone, but we definitely have some introverts for sure here. I mean, it's fine. I mean, we hire on attitude. You know, are they a nice person? Do they want to work? Do they want to work hard? Will they treat clients right? Will they treat their team members right? We don't care if they're quiet, if they're introvert or extrovert, as long as they have the right attitude.
So that leads me to my next question. So because it sounds like you have a really wonderful working relationship, you know, that you've created with these people and how they're being treated and how they can kind of sort themselves out, are you finding that since you've been making these changes that they're a lot more liable to go to you and say, hey, Ryan, I had this terrific job. Can we chat about this terrific idea? Can we chat about it instead of them just doing their work and going home? Because I find that when people feel like they're valued, they can kind of work at their own pace and do what it is that they need to do, they're going to be a lot more inclined to go, ah, brilliant idea. I wrote it in bathtub crayon on the shower last night. Can we talk about it? Which I've done, by the way.
Yes, and actually, it's funny you ask that because so we always mention to everyone here, like, if you have ideas, you know, let us know. It's like, you know, we want to hear them. Larissa, when she does her weekly check-ins, same thing. Like, any ideas? Like, just it's very we want to hear them. And so, like, when we do interviews here, we just hired. Like I mentioned, we just hired Taylor. So she came on board 3 weeks ago. So we just went through the whole interview process, and I'm part of the interview process in addition to a few other people here. And so almost always the candidate will ask, like, what do you like about working here? And obviously I'm a little biased, you know, being like in the family business and one of the partners. But it's funny. It's interesting to hear other team members answer it because I get to hear their answer because I'm in the room. And almost always they say, we like working here because they listen to our ideas. They're open to hearing our ideas. So I think it's something that people value a lot, and so we just try to encourage it.
Are you finding that this is an attitude that more small businesses are kind of putting into play? Like I have not worked for a business in a number of years, so I'm guessing here, but it seems to me like if you can walk into a business and you feel welcome. And you feel valued, And even if your ideas may not work for whatever it is that the business needs right now, they were at least heard. Are you finding that this is becoming more common among small businesses, or is it still that kind of, you know, clock in, clock out, see you tomorrow attitude?
I think it depends on the industry. I think it's definitely becoming more common because we have so much content being produced now between blogs and podcasts and audiobooks and the concept of culture.
Point.
And, you know, it's more and more just prevalent out there in the market, like the messages behind having a strong culture. And having a strong culture obviously involves a team and how you treat the team and the process you have in place and the team building events, all that stuff that goes into, you know, the work ethic and all that goes into culture. So I think it's becoming just more obvious that businesses need to pay attention to it. The hard thing is that it's hard. You know, it takes like regular effort to implement everything that goes into having a strong culture, and there's so many elements to it. So it's hard, but I think it's definitely becoming more common because, you know, the hiring someone's tough, you know, and everyone wants to have a higher turnover, and everyone wants to have a work atmosphere that I hope that is positive. And so, yeah, I think it's becoming more and more common. I think it just depends on the industry. I think you'll find that certain industries have accepted it more than others.
Well, and that leads me to something that everybody talks about anymore, and that's millennials. They're not going to stick around unless they feel like they're valued and heard. So
yes.
What are you finding with millennials in your company?
We have a lot of millennials here. I would say, I mean, I forget the exact age range. I know I'm out of it. I'm the previous generation, but I would say besides me, the entire digital team are millennials, and some are the one before it, or the one after, I should say. I think for them, they want to come to a place that that they like coming to. They want to feel appreciated. They want to feel respected. They want to feel heard. I know everyone says like millennials don't work hard, but that's not my experience. They work very hard. They want to have a certain work culture. They want to feel like what they're doing matters. That's why, like in our business, like we're a marketing agency, and our typical client on the digital side are small businesses. And so I'm always like when I share my weekly newsletter, if I have a win to share, like a review we just got from a client that they're so ecstatic, or like how we're helping a client so much that they have to hire someone, I always highlight the wins there so that they feel like their work makes a difference, because it does. But sometimes they might not be thinking it along that way. They may not be thinking about the impact that they're having because they're in the weeds with the work that they need to do. So I always try to highlight the wins because they want to feel like the work that they're doing matters. So I think those are the main key points.
And so you just said something really important, Ryan, and that's the impact people are having. And that's something we don't really recognize in the moment, is it? It's only later on down the road, like, oh, well, that actually made sense. Good for me. So is there any possible way, and I already know the answer to this, for us to recognize our own impact, or should we be paying attention to it? Because this is how we show up in the world, whether we're at work, whether we're on a podcast, whether we're in the grocery store, we are impacting those around us, I think, just by the way our attitude shows up. So is there any way for people to kind of go, that was a good thing I did. Good for me. Pat myself on the head, go back to work. Do you see a lot of people in the moment going, hey, that was pretty darn smart of me. Good for me. Or is it kind of delayed? It's an oddball question, I know.
No, it's not oddball at all. I think it really comes down to, it comes down to rewiring yourself. And not to go back to the morning routine, but you know, one of the reasons why I think everyone pushes the gratitude practice so much, the reason I know I do it, is because it rewires your brain to look for the positive in things. It rewires your brain to look for the positive, the wins and all that. And so I think it comes down to just rewiring yourself to to look for those, you know, take a step back and look for the things you're doing right. And that's why I always try to highlight wins in the newsletter, because if they're not going to do it for themselves, at least I can do it in the weekly newsletter. And then maybe as a byproduct, they're going to start to think a little bit differently. And I have noticed, like, when we just got a really awesome review on Google for one of our clients, and I knew it was left, but before I even said anything, a couple of people on the team were like, "Hey, did you see the review? Like, did you read what they said?" And so they were pretty ecstatic about it. So I think the team is starting to recognize that they need to look for those wins, and like what they do matters. And I don't think there's any magic pill for it. It's just a matter of just rewiring yourself to like be conscious of it and look for those things.
And then reciprocate. This is why Amazon reviews for authors are so important. When you are an author, you definitely want to see the good ones. And if the bad ones are showing up a bit too often, then you maybe need to rework how you're showing up. But yeah, it also, I think, wires you, the person leaving the review, to then go and look at other things. Because, you know, Amazon, of course, is excellent at saying, well, if you like this book, you might like this one as well. I mean, we all know that. But the thing is, it's a reciprocity. If you're doing something good or you're reading something good, then you want to, I think, be part of that generosity, part of that flow of things. And it sounds like that's what you guys are doing over there.
Yeah. And on the topic of rewiring, not to take this into a different direction, but one thing I wanted to mention on like the personal development side that I've kind of found to be helpful in terms of like rewiring yourself to think positively is social media. I know the problem with social media, like Instagram, for example, is that when you look through everyone's feeds, everything looks so perfect because no one's gonna post a picture like, "Oh, today was pretty sucky," you know, and at least most people won't. So basically you're looking at a feed of people that, including myself, honestly, my personal Instagram, it's all positive stuff, like my kids and things like that. So you look at everyone's feeds and it's like you start to develop this comparison issue where you're comparing yourself to like the perfect version of everyone's lives, especially if you're looking at someone's feed when you're like going through something hard, and then here's someone like with their perfect job or their perfect body or whatever the case is. You start to create this serious issue of comparison. You know, so what I've done is, you know, I started doing something that I took to the next level. I started following on my personal Instagram. I started following like there's a lot of like positive Instagram, like motivational type accounts where they post quotes and they post positive videos and just messages of inspiration. So I started following like half a dozen accounts so that when I'm looking through feeds, yeah, I'm looking through my friend's life and stuff like that, but then over there pops a motivational message and it helps kind of offset the comparison, and it's just another way for me to consume positive information. And I've even taken it in my typical fashion. I've taken it, you know, to a step further, and I've even created my own motivational account for Instagram. So now I'm actually cultivating motivational messages. So now I'm consuming the content and on an even more rapid basis because I have to like I have to put out the content, thus I have to consume the content on a more regular basis. And so I found it to be a really kind of like a ninja trick, like to hijack Instagram to help with feeding myself inspirational and motivational content. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm very careful what I consume on the internet. I'm smart enough to know that a lot of it is just garbage. And, you know, I'm not going to go, "Well, oh, you know, look at that. That's just perfect." Well, unless it's a Range Rover, then it's perfect. But, you know, it's just, I tend to be cautious isn't the word. I don't believe most of what I see, to be honest with you. I never have. But I love the idea of the graphics for inspiration and for motivation. And I'm like you, I will go for those first because it's a quick, healthy hit. You can read something by Jim Rohn, a quote. You can read Coach John Wooden. You cannot beat him. He's fabulous. I mean, you can just go, "Oh, well, that makes sense." And I find that the more you look for these things, the more they're going to pop up just when you're ready to read it or hear it. Have you ever done, I know you've done this, we all do, if we're deep readers and deep thinkers, you can read a book multiple times. I mean, I don't own a book that I haven't read more than once. Truly, I don't. And, I mean, I've read since I was 3 years old. Abby, sorry, my dog is snoring. Can you hear her? She's snoring really loud.
No.
I'm surprised.
No, I can hear it.
But, you know, I will read a book. It can be Zig Ziglar. It can be anything. It can be a great work of fiction. And all of a sudden, I'll find something that I swear I never read it before, but it presented itself just when I was ready to hear it, see it, read it, whatever it was. And this happens all the time. You just need to be aware. So I'm with you. I love those inspirational quotes. And people will say, oh, why are you doing all these quotes? Because they're brilliant. That's why. So that makes perfect sense to me.
And you feel like you're helping people. Like if you're posting content that's inspirational, motivational, you know, whether even if it's just one person that they needed to hear that at that exact moment, you're kind of doing your part to help yourself, but also help others, inspire other people. So it's kind of cool. It's
exactly.
I find it exciting.
Yeah, I agree with you. And so many of these have really withstood the time, you know, the sands of time. I mean, some of them are quite old, and they still make perfect sense. So, you know, there's a lot of wisdom in words if you kind of ignore the garbage and go straight for the stuff that feeds your soul. So, you know, do quotes. Do them all the time is what I say. Listen, we are about 3 minutes out. Is there anything else that you wanted to chat about before we end?
I think, you know, I guess just to wrap it up, it's you know, working on yourself, having a morning routine, be conscious of how you talk to yourself, be conscious of the content that you consume, you know, listen to good audiobooks. There's plenty of podcasts out there that put out good content too, like motivational content. The Jim Rohn book that I mentioned, Ultimate Library, that's an awesome investment for $40. I think we covered so many different topics. I hope your audience, you know, pull some gems out of it. And I can't think of anything else to mention.
No, absolutely. There's a lot of gems here. Listen, it is Kyle Wilson. Go to kylewilson.com, and you'll find the whole Jim Rohn story there.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, and I'll send you a link to it. Well, listen, Ryan, before we end this, and it has been a great pleasure speaking with you again, where can people find you on the web?
Yeah, I'll give you two links. I mentioned the Instagram account that I started for motivational quotes and what have you, and I just started the account a couple months ago. So, you know, I'm fine-tuning the messages and all that, but it's the handle for Instagram is Strong Business Mindset, Strong Business Mindset. And then, of course, you can visit Ballantyne.com, my company, Ballantyne.com.
Okay, I'm definitely going to go find that on Instagram. Thank you again. It has been a pleasure speaking with you, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and the advice and the shares that you gave our audience. So before we say goodbye,
thanks.
I would like to – you're very welcome, and it's my pleasure – before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.